Hi, my name is Rachel, and you're listening to Maker Style, a creative lifestyle podcast where we talk about small business, blogging, and of course, lots and lots of sewing. Listening to the Maker Style podcast is like sitting down for a coffee and chat with your girlfriends who are just as passionate about making things as you are. Hey everyone, welcome to episode 18 of the Maker Style podcast. This is a special bonus Thursday episode in the middle of bra making month, just because I thought it would be nice to break up this time a little bit and talk about something different just in case bra making is your jam. Isn't your jam. Anyways, today I have an amazing interview lined up with you with Heather Lou from Closet Case Files. If you haven't heard of Closet Case Files, you are missing out. She is one of the original, what I would say, one of the original indie designers from back in the day, one of the blogs that I learned to sew following. So I've been obsessed with Heather's brand for a long time. And what is so interesting about what Heather does is she creates sewing patterns, and her brand, I guess, because there's more than just Heather working there now, is their brand. They make sewing patterns that improve your sewing practice. I would describe these patterns as being things that intimidate me personally, but Heather's going to come on the show and set me straight and tell me why I shouldn't think like that and why we shouldn't talk about these things like that. She would rather say that they are a little bit more involved, because Heather truly believes that you can sew anything. She will teach you how to sew jackets, coats, anoraks, bathing suits, most famously the jeans, the ginger jeans. That was all Heather. So she's come on the show today to help break some more of those educational barriers and try and raise some more awareness about coat sewing and teach you some tips along the way to make you want to dive into your first coat project. I was really hoping to air this episode in the middle of like a blizzard, because in this winter time, you would expect it in Canada that eventually we would get a blizzard. But no, I've been waiting since December to put this episode out at an appropriate time. And there is no snow on the ground right now. It is January 22nd. No snow. 10 degrees today. What is going on? Maybe I shouldn't complain about no winter, but it kind of gives me bad feels. I kind of want people in Canada to have winters. I just feel like we have to suffer through it. It's just part of us. And if we can't complain about the snow, who are we? Anyways, back to the episode today. Heather's going to be sharing some amazing and wonderful tips about sewing coats that I think you guys are really going to enjoy. So if you've been curious about tackling a project that you've maybe been scared to try, I think you're really going to love this episode, because nothing should scare you. Heather's going to tell you that you can sew anything you want, including a coat, and she's going to help you do that. So let's head on to the episode and hear her best tips for coat sewing after this short message. It's the Maker Style Bra Making Month, and I'm so excited to have you along for the ride here. We've got a big month planned with so many awesome interviews and information about how to sew the bra and lingerie sets of your dreams. We'll be doing weekly episodes featuring different bra makers until the 6th of February. But if you're not into bra making, don't worry. We're going to be having three regular bonus episodes that talk about different topics other than bra making throughout the month of January on Thursdays. I'll let you guys know on Instagram when that happens. If you want to be the first to know, make sure you give me a follow there at maker.style and you'll never miss an update. Or just subscribe to the podcast and you'll get it right into your feed when it's released. Hey Heather, how are you doing today?
I'm doing very well, Rachel. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you for coming on the show. I'm really excited to have you here today. I noticed we discussed earlier a little bit about how we were going to talk about sewing outerwear and some tips and tricks for that. But before we get into that, do you mind just telling the listeners a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I will just preface whatever I'm going to say, just to mention to anybody, in case you hear any thumping, they're doing demolition in my building right now. So they're a couple floors down, but I can hear it. So if anybody hears thumping, nobody's being murdered in my apartment. They're just murdering the drywall two floors down. Okay, a little bit about me. So I am the brains and face behind Closet Case Patterns, which started out as a sewing blog about 6 years ago. And then, like a lot of people who start sewing, I got completely and totally obsessed. And I was an interior designer at the time, but I kind of not so much lost interest in interior design, but when I got home, I would just like obsessively sew for 6-7 hours a night for years, and ended up teaching myself a lot of pattern making skills and kind of really quickly increased my sewing skills as a result of this kind of like intense personal study. And then I released a sewing pattern a couple years ago called the Bombshell, which I at the time really had no plans for this to be a business. It was just like something I was working on and thought other people would like, and it really took off. And I still, you know, it was still like another year before I kind of came around to the idea of maybe trying out Closet Case Files, which was the blog name, as a sewing pattern company. And now it's been 2.5 years that it's been a full-time career change for me.
Oh, wow.
And I think we're about to release our 11th pattern. So, yeah, it's been kind of a whirlwind 3 years, but it's been very fun.
Awesome. No, that's amazing. I love hearing all these success stories of sewing small businesses. It's really fun. It makes you feel good about being in this industry for sure.
Yeah, it is. It's, I still kind of can't believe it. like today I'm a big fan of doing a little bit of self-care because I work a lot. The last couple months have been a little bit insane. And so this week I was like, you know what? I'm going to drop the dog off and go and do some yoga today, like right in the middle of the day. And I went to a hot yoga class. And so you're getting me at like my most, like blissed out right now. Yeah, so I'm like hot yoga out. But yeah, one of the things I've kind of learned over the last couple of years is that you have to like do things like that. You know, sometimes I forget I'm the boss. Yeah. Like I'll be talking to my boyfriend, I'm like, oh, I have like this crazy deadline and I have all this stuff to do and I don't know how I'm going to get it finished. And he's like, you realize that you are the one setting the deadline, right? I'm like, oh, right. I am my own boss. I can change things. So I also have to remind myself that like I am not chained to a desk. I could go do a yoga class in the middle of the day and nobody's going to give me, you know, grief for it. So.
It can be hard though, especially if you're growing a small business and you're depending on you and your success for your income. It can definitely be scary, I guess, to reward yourself and, you know, take that break in the middle of the day and take care of yourself because it's not directly coming back to income and making money. But I'm sure you're probably a million times more productive when you take better care of yourself.
Well, that's the thing is that what I've had to learn the hard way is that I am not happy or productive. Or I don't have good ideas when I don't like go on vacation a couple times a year and take days off every once in a while just to sew, make sure I get enough sleep, you know, go to get exercise, like silly things. Because in my worst moments, like I could just sit at my computer and work for 80 hours a week. Like I think it's great. I think you need that to, you know, if you're starting a business from scratch, you absolutely need that kind of drive. But it's also not sustainable in the long run. So the last like year for me has been about, yeah, self-care, figuring out like when to take a break, and then knowing that it's going to pay back. It's going to pay itself off in the long run just with me not being an insane person. So
always a good thing, right?
Yeah.
Awesome. Now, one of the kind of unique things about your pattern company that I've always really loved is that you try and teach really new and interesting skills. I know most of the listeners will recognize you from the Ginger Jeans. Those were such a huge hit and really like a big deal when they came out, because who was sewing jeans at the time other than you and the Ginger Jeans pattern? It was kind of revolutionary in that way. Or at least that's what it felt like as someone watching the process. And I know ever since then you've taken on some other like more technically challenging sewing projects, from the swimsuits, like the Bombshell that you mentioned, and also some coats.
Yes.
Awesome. So why do you like to design things that are so challenging as opposed to just more basic kind of everyday patterns that are a little bit more easier to sew? Why do you pick things that are hard?
I would take issue with the words challenging and hard.
Awesome.
This is part of like my kind of mission, is that I think these are stories that we tell ourselves. We see a pair of jeans and we're like, that's hard to make. And it's not hard to make. And I think that kind of language, when you're like, because I refer to sewing as like my sewing practice, right? So it's just like a yoga practice, or, you know, it's like any other kind of activity that you sustain in your life that is, you know, part of your lifestyle. It's something that you're constantly working on and striving on. I think that when you tell yourself something is hard or difficult, you're basically talking yourself out of it. Mm-hmm. And I think that the only way that like we grow as people, as makers, as like human beings in the world, is to constantly be trying to learn new things, pushing ourselves forward. So I personally don't think sewing a pair of jeans is hard. I think if you can make a simple dress, you can just as easily make a pair of jeans. The difference is that the process is going to be a little bit longer. Mm-hmm. There's more steps. you might have to be a little bit more patient with yourself and a little bit more careful as you're going along. But I really firmly believe that absolutely anybody who sews can make a pair of jeans. So I take umbrage with this language that we use with ourselves, because I feel like it's very self-defeating. Mm-hmm. And I just learned from my own sewing practice, have really learned that, like, there is absolutely nothing I can't make if I set my mind to it. You know, I do a little bit of research, a little bit of practice. If I wanted to, next week I could start making like a couture gown and it would be beautiful. And I think part of that success comes from telling yourself that you can do things. So my kind of bête noire, like the thing that kind of drives me a little bit crazy, is when I see people telling themselves, like talking themselves out of these things. Like, I want to make a pair of jeans, but I'm scared. So because I know that there is, you know, there's a lot of like loaded history and why women in particular tell each other, like tell ourselves these stories that we're like not good enough and smart enough to do things. What my mission is as like a pattern designer and as like a business owner is to facilitate people's sewing practice and to make it as easy as possible for them to achieve success. So it's meant for me, and also personally, like I do like slightly more involving projects. Like I like things that take a little bit longer, that you know, that are, I'm practicing new skills. There's lots of steps. I personally like that. And so I'm kind of trying to convince other people that that's fun as well. And then I think the additional aspect that I don't think a lot of people appreciate unless they actually like go and take on that project that's super challenging, is that the reward and the payback for finishing something that you think is going to be hard or that you're scared of is astronomically larger than it is to like make a simple t-shirt or a dress. Right. Yeah. So when you have that pair of jeans that you finish and you're like, holy like smokes, like I made a pair of jeans, or you make a winter coat, like a fully lined wool coat with like top stitching and a little bit of tailoring. And when you look at that, like that sense of accomplishment is incredible. So I think that's a little bit of a high that I'm always chasing. And even now, like I've made 800 pairs of jeans. I've made so many coats, but I still get that feeling and that sense of pride and accomplishment whenever I make something that's a little bit more involved. Obviously, like people have that feeling whenever they make anything, but I think that I've seen people's lives transformed mm-hmm. by challenging themselves to do these harder things. And I think like it's a really safe place. You know, if you want to challenge yourself and you want to get better at something, sewing is like the safest place to do it, because it's a conversation that you're having with yourself. Nobody else is involved. You know, if something doesn't work out, you don't need to tell anybody. You know, you're not obligated to share it on Instagram. Like, this is really, you know, it's like a soulful practice. It's just mm-hmm. like, this is a conversation you have with yourself. And I think like the repercussions are deep and far reaching. Anyways, that was a very long winded answer to explain why I tend to like slightly more complicated sewing patterns. But that basically sums it up. Having said that, we do have a couple simpler ones planned, because I also like appreciate a quick sew. But I do have a special place in my heart for more involved. I prefer to say more involved sewing projects.
More involved. Well, we'll stick with that. But that's awesome. I really appreciate all of that information. You touched on so many important things. First of all, I love that you call sewing a practice. I think that is amazing. And I think that we should definitely take on that verbiage more often. Because that's really great. Just the way that we look at things. Because it doesn't have to be this stagnant thing we can do. We can learn and evolve and get better at it all the time. So I really like that. And secondly, I love that you touched on fear and the way that we kind of frame problems in our mind. And that's a great segue to what we want to talk about today, being outerwear. And I'm kind of curious, when people talk about sewing coats, how do people talk themselves out of that? And what's kind of the common fear around that project in particular? And kind of where does that come from, do you think?
Well, I think there's two things. I think when you look at a finished coat, it's hard to even visualize how it comes together, especially mm-hmm. if it's a lined coat. You know, there's a lot of pieces. I mean, Claire, my winter coat pattern, I think, especially like the fold-over version with buttons, I think as far as coats go, is fairly simple to make. But I think people look at that finished product and they're like, I don't even know where to start. Mm-hmm. So I think that's part of it. And then the second thing is especially with something like wool, it's kind of an intimidating fabric to sew with. It's expensive. It mm-hmm. requires, I think it's really fun to work with, but it does require a little bit of caution and care. So I think, you know, the combination of this intimidating finished product and then this material that maybe people aren't used to working with can be a little bit intimidating. Having said that, I think coat making is so much fun. I did end up writing down some tips, so I don't know if you want me to go through them or not.
Yeah, for sure. I'd love for you to share them. What's your first one?
Okay, so my number one tip is especially if you're making a winter coat, is to invest money. and to spend as much money as you can afford to make the coat. Here's why. If you're making yourself a winter coat and you live in a cold place, like the frozen hell that I live in, Montreal, you might be wearing this coat for 5 to 6 months out of the year. It's the one article of clothing that you might wear every single day, and then you're going to pull it out, you're going to put it away for the summer, you're going to pull it back out again. So it's something, you know, there's very few articles of clothing in your wardrobe you're going to wear as often, so I think it's really worth the investment to buy really beautiful fabrics that, A, are going to handle well, but they're going to wear well, and that you're going to, you know, get a sense of satisfaction out of every time you use them. So, you know, not everybody can afford a $80 a yard Pendleton wool. But if you're making a wool coat, I think, you know, expect to pay $30 a meter, say, for wool. Okay. Sometimes you could get it for cheaper, but, you know, if the final investment for this pattern ends up costing you $100, $150, let's say max. I think I've made a lot of coats, and on the high end, that's how much a wool coat will cost me to make. Mm-hmm. For me to get the similar, like the same quality, it would cost five times that much, mm-hmm. right? Most winter coats you'll buy in a ready-to-wear store are just complete garbage and are going to fall apart. So buy great, like the best wool you can afford. Buy beautiful linings. So at all costs, I would suggest avoiding acetate and polyester linings. They shred a lot faster. Mm-hmm. They don't feel nice. They don't look nice. They're not going to give you that like little secret thrill when you go to open your coat. So I always like using like a silk charmeuse, or, you know, even on the lower end, if you want something a little bit less expensive, Rayon Bemberg is beautiful. Comes in lots of different colors. My personal favorite lining fabric for coats is called Kasha. It's a satin finish on one side and then flannel backed on the other. Mm-hmm. So it's a really great option for really cold climates because it basically has like a flannel inner lining like built in.
Oh, absolutely. That sounds beautiful.
Yes. So great fabrics. Don't shy away from the good fabric.
Here's a question about fabrics. Sure. I know for me in particular, this is very selfish, but I live in an area, I'm from Waterloo. So not too far where you grew up actually in Windsor, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but there's not a whole lot of fabric stores. I know for a lot of listeners, you can kind of relate that there may not be a local fabric store that stocks a lot of awesome coat making materials. There's a lot of quilting stuff that we can find in these smaller stores. So my question for you is, do you have any online resources that you turn to that are really dependable for coat fabrics and stuff like that?
Well, I mean, the kind of penultimate source is Mood. They really do have an awesome selection. And what I like, Mood will give you swatches. I think they charge $1 a swatch, but what I will do is try to plan ahead. So if I'm going to order a few things for Mood, if you order, spend a certain amount, they will give you a certain amount of swatches for free.
Awesome.
So if I know, okay, I'm going to make some t-shirts or some shirts, I'll like buy like stuff that I know, okay, I'll buy some knits and silk from Mood. That's going to be fine. And then I'll order a couple swatches for coats. They're great. Rotex is great for coat fabric. It's a little bit more expensive, but they have really beautiful options. And then obviously, like, there's a lot of smaller independent stores. Like, I know Carolyn at Blackbird Fabrics has often sourced some nice coatings. So I think it's just a matter of looking around. I'm actually just trying to open up my Claire Coat Sew Along post because I know that I had a long list of... Anyways, if anybody's interested, I have a long list of links of sources.
Perfect.
For coat making in the Claire Coat Sew Along on my blog.
But yeah, I'll share a link to that.
Yeah, there's lots and lots of places to get wool. You know, and if you're nervous about things, it's always nice to get samples of stuff.
Awesome. One last question about fabrics. I know if you're going to be investing a lot of money into this coat, you'll probably want to make a muslin first. Is there any special considerations that you'd need to make when choosing the fabric for your muslin to make sure that it kind of accurately represents the thickness of the wool, or is that something you don't need to worry about too much?
Yeah, I was going to say that it's always a good idea to make a muslin for sure with the coat because you are investing. There's a lot of time and energy and money that goes into a coat making project. In general, when I make muslins, I try to make muslins out of the same type of material that I'm making the final thing out of. So if I'm making if I'm making jeans, I'll use the same fabric. If I'm making a t-shirt, I'll use the same fabric that I'm planning on using in the final thing. Obviously with coats, that's not necessarily possible because wool is a lot more expensive. So I think just like a heavyweight muslin is completely fine to make, a coat muslin with, as long as it's like, you know, cotton. When in doubt, like use a natural fiber like cotton. But that's completely appropriate to make a coat muslin. You don't need to be using wool for your muslin.
Awesome. Well, thank you.
My pleasure. Okay, other tips. Okay, in terms of other fabrics, so the latest pattern we just released was the Kelly Anorak, which is kind of a all-weather utility jacket, I guess. It was. I ended up designing it because I just got a dog this year and I'm outside all the time and it's raining and I didn't have anything to wear when I was like out walking the dog. So
need that something was, practical.
Yeah, it was something practical, but still kind of stylish. And, you know, a lot of our samples had more of like an army jacket finish, which I know has been kind of on trend for the last couple of years. Mm. But then I just made, because I didn't have an actual raincoat version of it. And I was like, I designed this so it'd have a raincoat and I don't actually have a raincoat. So I used this red nylon that I got at the Pendleton outlet last year. And it was like, it's shockingly warm. So it's red nylon. And then I interlined or underlined the coat because the coat, the Kelly Anorak doesn't have a lining yet. I'm working on a pattern expansion pack since there's been a lot of interest.
Oh, awesome.
But just to add warmth to it. And this can be done with a clear coat or any coat you're using, as I interlined it with another layer of cotton flannel. So between the red nylon and the cotton flannel, it's quite warm. I mean, it's not going to be good for negative minus 10 Celsius winter, but it's definitely, it's like minus 2 right now, and it's totally warm enough to wear outside with a sweater. So why was I bringing this up? Anyway, because I was actually just surprised by nylon, like as an outerwear fabric, it was surprisingly warm, which brings me into the next thing is, yes, adding warmth to your coats. So there's about a month or two in Montreal where it's so cold that I basically have to use a parka, like when it's minus 35.
Oh, yeah.
I can't. I mean, like, I... There's very little that I could do with, like, a wool coat that would not make me want to die.
No, absolutely.
So it's, like, parka weather for about 2 months. But up until then, I like to add warmth to my coats with inner lining. So it can get a little bit confusing because, like, the lining is the layer that protects the coat. You know, everybody knows what a lining is. It's protecting the raw side of the fabric with your body. Mm-hmm. And then you have inner lining. So an inner lining is a layer of cotton batting, polyester batting, a thin slate. You could use cotton flannel. You could use lamb's wool that you're adding as a layer in between the lining and the fabric or the body of the coat as a layer of warmth. Then there's also underlining is when you basically like use something like cotton flannel or cotton, for example, like you're making a dress, and so you would underline, if you have like a thin fabric, you use two pieces of fabric and you treat them as one piece of fabric. Mm-hmm. So you can underline or interline a coat, depending on how, like if you get like a really lightweight wool and you wanted to use it as a coat, you could interline it with a slightly stiffer, underline it with a slightly stiffer cotton, and then if you wanted to add a layer of warmth, you could underline it with like a little bit of lamb's wool. So I think those terms, like even myself saying them out loud, get a little confusing, but there are a few different ways that you can add warmth to a coat that aren't just, you know, lining and coat. You can, you know, put layers in between to help make them a little bit warmer.
Awesome. So just to check my own understanding, when we do interlining, it's usually things like lamb wool, thin slate, things that are going to work to protect you and make you a little bit warmer in between the layers of like the outer shell and the lining. Is this sewn separately? Because I know when you underline something, you just treat it as one layer of fabric. So how does that kind of differ with interlining?
So you can treat interlining the same way. You're just going to really aggressively grade your seams. So if you're using lamb's wool, you're going to treat it similar. Like you're going to basically sew it into the coat just like you would with underlining. But you're not going to put it everywhere. You're basically going to put it on the body and the sleeves. And you're going to make sure that when your seams are finished that you are really grading them, because otherwise, you know, if you have a layer of lamb's wool, a layer of wool, like it's going to get quite thick.
Okay. Awesome. Good to know. Thank you. What's your next tip?
Okay. So I already said the luxurious linings. So I just made a Claire coat. Well, I actually made it last year, but I haven't shared it on the blog yet, but it's like one of my like masterpieces. I was really proud of it. So I used this like super crazy, like double-faced heavy twill, and I used a leather in the raglan sleeve. And then I used this like cheetah print silk charmeuse as a lining. And it is so beautiful. It's like every time I look at it, I just get this like little secret thrill.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, paying attention to the lining is such a great idea because it's just this little secret. Like you open your coat and you see like, ooh, it's so nice. And the thing is, even if you buy a really nice ready-to-wear coat, I find most of the time they just do not like they're just using whatever crap they can in the coat to save money. Mm-hmm. And so you don't have that, like, you know, personal touch on the inside.
And it's always more fun when you pick it out yourself too, you can pick something that you really love.
Yes, absolutely.
I have to ask though, before we go on, how many coats have you sewn for yourself? Because it sounds like you've got quite an awesome coat wardrobe, and I'm a little jealous.
How many do I have? I'm just thinking aloud. I have 3 Kelly anoraks for myself, and then I have 5 finished Claire coats, 2 of them which I'm trying to save and not wear, because you don't want to wear all your samples. It's just nice to have, like, samples that don't have, like, tea stains and stuff on them. So then I have, like, yeah, I guess 3 Claire coats that I wear of my own, and then I also made the Grain Line Cascade coat a few years ago, which I still have. So, yeah, let's say 7 or 8 coats.
You've got an awesome coat wardrobe going on there. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And is the cheetah or leopard print lining your favorite, or do you have another fun lining favorite to share?
That one's pretty good. Although I really love the Kelly anorak I just made too. It's underlined with this like cozy charcoal plaid cotton flannel.
Oh, that's lovely.
Super cozy.
Matches the red too, I bet.
Yes, absolutely.
Awesome. What's your next tip?
So my next tip, and this is particularly important if you are sewing a wool coat, is to use the right interfacing. So I know interfacing can get a little bit intimidating, especially like you go to the fabric store, or if you're buying online, you're like, I don't even know what I'm getting. With coats and with tailoring applications in general, you want to use something called fusible weft interfacing. So it's weft, W-E-F-T. And it's basically like a knit interfacing. It's not like a, you know, the typical interfacing you might be used to seeing. It's like almost like a sheet. It's like they clearly made, like, almost like printed it, and it's sticky on one side, but it's like a sheet. So this stuff is actually woven together, and it just has a really beautiful hand. So when you fuse it to your wool, it just gives this like really nice drape. It gives it the stability to the wool. So because the problem with wool is that if it's not stabilized in key areas, it can really get stretched out. Mm-hmm. So it's really important that you're stabilizing shoulder seams, that you're stabilizing the front of the coat, that you're stabilizing around the shoulders, because otherwise over time it's going to get stretched out.
Awesome. And that's W-E-F-T?
Yeah. So that's imperative that you're using weft. I mean, I think people have had success using other interfacing, but that's honestly the only thing I use, and it's really given me great success when I'm interfacing wool.
Awesome. And if you're going to be investing in the wool, you might as well get the proper interfacing and make the coat the right way.
Absolutely. And there's, you know, if you Google weft interfacing, there's dozens of sources for it. So I think also in my Claire Sew Along, I provide lots of resources for weft interfacing.
Awesome. Perfect.
The other thing, in terms of tools that I would suggest investing in that are going to come in handy throughout your sewing practice, throughout your sewing career, is a seam roll and a tailor's ham. So they can be like expensive, unless, I know there's lots of tutorials to make them online if you're feeling like saving money, but I bought both of mine. I don't know, they're probably 15, 20 bucks each. They're stuffed with sawdust and I use them all the time. So when you're pressing wool and you're working with outerwear fabrics, it's really, you know, the unfortunate aspect of sewing for a lot of people is how much pressing it is. Like coat making, even more so, is like 95% pressing. You really need to pay attention to pressing cleanly and well with lots of steam so that you get these like beautiful curved, you know, seams with your wool. So yeah, tailor's ham, seam roll, use them all the time. And I also suggest getting a pressing cloth, either like a thin cotton, or I like, I bought some cheap white silk organza that I use for pressing cloth, because wool can bruise. So if you use too much pressure without a pressing cloth, you might end up leaving basically like an iron impression on the wool. So I like to use a silk organza pressing cloth when I'm pressing. So those tools will really like get you really beautiful results when you're pressing your wool.
Do you find that you use the seam roll, the silk organza pressing cloth, and the tailor's ham in other projects as well?
I use my tailor's ham all the time.
Awesome.
We just filmed a class for jean making, and I think half of the pressing that I did for the jeans was on the seam roll, or sorry, it was on the tailor's ham, because when you're curving like the butt curve or the hip curve, all of these areas where there's like a curved seam, it's so much easier to press when you're actually pressing on a curved surface rather than trying to press it a curve on a flat ironing board. So I use them all the time.
No, that makes a lot of sense too, and that's something I know I should get on. I've been using like a rolled up towel to try and do a lot of curd pressing, and it does not work nearly as well as the pressing ham, or sorry, the Taylor's ham does, I'm sure.
Yeah, and I mean, like, a seam roll is easy. It's like you just sew up a tube, and you can just fill it with whatever, like anything that's soft, even like cut up bits of like knit fabric if you want. The seam roll is great because when you are, you know, often you'll press a seam, and then on the other side you can see the imprint of your seam allowance on the right side of the fabric. So if you use a seam roll and you press your seam on a curved surface, it helps reduce that effect because you're basically, the seam is not flat, it's like on its own curve.
Oh, good to know.
Yeah,
if you had to recommend one or the other, the Taylor's ham or the seam roll, which would you recommend?
I think I use my Taylor's ham more often. Okay, so I would say buy the Taylor's ham and then make the seam roll, because the seam roll is a little bit easier to make.
That's a good compromise then. Awesome.
Yeah. Perfect. So I think I'm at the end of my coat making tips. Well, a lot more to say, but one more thing that people should absolutely invest in is a wood clapper.
Ooh. So, yeah, that sounds very interesting.
It's my favorite thing in the world, and it just is basically like a piece of hardwood. So you don't have to buy one if you know anybody with like a woodworking studio and they have a piece of hardwood. So not softwood like pine, but something hard like, you know, hickory or oak. It's basically just like a flat, big piece of wood, and when you are pressing your seams, and so this doesn't matter if you're using wool, any seam, especially with jean making, they're super handy. When you hit your seam with a lot of heat and steam, you put the wood clapper on top of the seam, and then it basically like sucks up the heat and sucks up the moisture that you put into the seam, kind of locking it. So you just get these like really sharp, beautiful, crisp seams.
Oh, lovely.
It's really hard to get otherwise.
Awesome. We'll link all those awesome handy tools in the show notes if you guys are curious about maybe upping your sewing game and trying one of them out. They all sound like a lot of fun and the key to getting awesome pressing.
Yes.
Awesome. Well, we're just about at time, Heather, so I that works out really great that we're all out of tips. But I just wanted to thank you so much for coming on the show today. You've definitely shared a lot of awesome tips with us about sewing outerwear and tackling on some more challenging projects, and I hope all the listeners out there can feel a little bit more confident in tackling some of these bigger projects. And I think that if you guys sew a coat, you should definitely let us know, because it'd be really, really cool.
Yes, please do.
Awesome.
I love if anybody's making Kelly anoraks or Claire coats out there and you want to share what you're making, I love seeing it on Instagram. So just, you can tag us. It's @closetcase.patterns.
Awesome. And just before you go, where can we find out more about you if anyone's curious?
So,
which I'm sure they are.
So if they are, they can come check out our blog, which is at closetcasepatterns.com. We're on Instagram, as I said, at closetcase.patterns. We're on Twitter at Closet Case Files. We're still kind of switching. We're basically going to be dropping the files shortly and going to only Closet Case Patterns, but some usernames I haven't been able to switch over. Twitter is one of them. I'm basically mostly on Instagram and my blog. I mean, we use Twitter, but it's not my favorite. I much prefer Instagram.
Yeah, me too. I know. It's much more fun. All the pictures are great.
I know.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Heather, so much. It's been a total blast talking with you, and I really appreciate all the awesome information you shared with us.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Awesome. You have a great day. Enjoy the rest of the construction.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
That's all I have for today's episode, guys. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen. I really appreciate you hanging out here with me. It's like my favorite part of the week. Another part of the week that I really enjoy is the time of the week where we sit back on Instagram or on the blog and we chat about this week's episode. So if you're interested in getting involved in the conversation, I would love to have you there. You can check out my blog with all the show notes at makerstyle.ca or on Instagram at maker.style. I can't wait to see you there and have a wonderful week.